Nobby had been left alone for a moment while the party buzzed around him. So he'd elbowed some waiters away from the buffet and was currently scraping out a bowl with his knife. "Ah, Lord Denobbs," said a voice behind him. He turned. "Watcha," he said, licking the knife and wiping it on the tablecloth. "Are you busy, my lord?" "Just making myself this meat paste sandwich, said Nobby. "That's pâté de foie gras, my lord." "So what that... Is that what it's called?" "It doesn't have the kick of clamor's beefy might spread. I know that. Want a quail's egg? They're a bit small." "No, thank you. There's loads of them," said Nobby generously. "They're free. You don't have to pay, even so." "Sorry. Even so, I can get six in my mouth at once. Watch. Amazing, my lord. I was wondering, however, whether you would care to join a few of us in the smoking room." "Indeed." A friendly arm was put around Nobby's shoulders, and he was adroitly piloted away from the buffet. But not before he had grabbed a plate of chicken legs. "So many people want to talk to you." Sergeant Cullen tried to clean himself up, but trying to clean yourself up with water from the Ankh was a difficult maneuver. The best you could hope for was an all-over gray. Fred Cullen hadn't reached Vimes' level of sophisticated despair. Vimes took the view that life was so full of things happening erratically in all directions that the chances of any of them making some kind of relevant sense were remote in the extreme. Cullen, being by nature more optimistic and by intellect a good deal slower, was still at the clues are important stage. Why had he been tied up with string? There were still loops of it around his arms and legs. "You sure you don't know where I was?" he said. He walked into the place," said wee Mad Arthur, trotting beside him. "How come yous don't know?" "'Cause it was dark and foggy, and I wasn't paying attention, that's why. I was just going through the motions. Aha, good one. Don't mess about. Where was I?" "Don't ask me," said wee Mad Arthur. "I just hunts under the whole cattle market area. I don't bother about what's up top. Like I said, them runs go everywhere. Anyone along there might make string. It's all animal stuff, I tell you, yes. Sausages and soap and stuff like that. Is this the bit where yous gives me the money?" Cullen patted his pockets. They squelched. "You'll have to come to the watch house, wee Mad Arthur. I got a business to run here. I'm swearing you in as a special watchman for the night," said Cullen. "What's the pay?" "$1 a night." Wee Mad Arthur's tiny eyes gleamed. They gleamed red. "Ye gods, you look awful," said Cullen. "What are you looking at my ear for?" Wee Mad Arthur said nothing. Cullen turned. A golem was standing behind him. It was taller than any he'd seen before, and much better proportioned. A human statue rather than the gross shape of the usual golems. And handsome, too, in the cold way of a statue, and its eyes shone like red searchlights. It raised a fist above its head and opened its mouth. More red light streamed out. It screamed like a bull. Wee Mad Arthur kicked Cullen on the ankle. "Are we running or what?" he said. Cullen backed away, still staring at the thing. It's all right. They can't move fast," he muttered. And then his sensible body gave up on his stupid brain and fired up his legs, spinning him around and shoving him in the opposite direction. He risked it looking over his shoulder. The golem was running after him in long, easy strides. Wee Mad Arthur caught him up. Cullen was used to proceeding gently. He wasn't built for high speeds, and said so. "And you certainly can't run faster than that thing," he wheezed. "Just so long as I can run faster than you," said Wee Mad Arthur. "This way. This way." There was a a flight of old wooden stairs against the side of a warehouse. The gnome went up them like the rats he hunted. Colin, panting like a steam engine, followed him. He stopped halfway up and looked around. The golem had reached the bottom step. It tested it carefully. The wood creaked and the whole stairway, gray with age, trembled. "Won't take the weight," said Wee Mad Arthur. "The bugger's gonna smash it up, yeah? Yeah." The golem took another step. The wood groaned. Colin got a grip on himself and hurried on up the stairs. Behind him, the golem seemed to have satisfied itself with the wood that the wood could indeed take its weight and started to leap from step to step. The rail shook under Colin's hands, and the whole structure swayed. "Come on, will yous?" said Wee Mad Arthur, who had already reached the top. "It's gaining on yous." The golem lunged. The stairs gave way. Colin flung out his hands and grabbed the edge of the roof. Then his body thudded into the side of the building. There was the distant sound of woodwork hitting cobbles. "Come on, then," said Wee Mad Arthur. "Pull yourself up, you silly bugger." "Can't," said Colin. "Why not?" "It's holding on to my foot." "A cigar, your lordship." "Brandy, my lord." Lord de Nob sat back in the comfort of his chair. His feet only just reached the ground. "Brandy and cigars, eh? This was the life, all right." He took a deep puff at the cigar. "We were just talking, my lord, about the future governance of the city. Now that poor Lord Veterinary's health is so bad." Nobby nodded. "This was the kind of thing you talked about when you were a Nob. This was what he'd been born for. The brandy was giving him a pleasant, warm feeling. It would obviously upset the current ill-equilibrium if we looked for a new position at this point," said another armchair. "What is your view, Lord de Nob?" "Oh, yeah, right. The guild would fight like cats in a sack," said Nobby. "Everyone knows that. A masterly summary, if I may say so." There was a gentle murmur of agreement from the other chairs. Nobby grinned. "Oh, yes, this was the bee's pajamas, and no mistake. Hobnobbing with his fellow Nobs. Talking big talk about important matters instead of having to think up the reasons why the tea money tin was empty. Oh, yes." A chair said, "Besides, are any of the guild leaders up to the task?"
"Oh, they can organize a bunch of tradesmen, but ruling an entire city, I think not. Gentlemen, perhaps it is time for a new direction. Perhaps it is time for blood to reveal itself." "Odd way of putting it," Nobby thought. "But clearly, this was how you were supposed to speak." "A town like this," said a chair, "the city will surely look at those representative of its most venerable families. It would be in all our interest if such a one would take up the burden." "He'd need his head examined, if you want my opinion," said Nobby. He took another swig of the brandy and waved the cigar expansively. "Still, not to worry," he said. "Everyone knows we've got a king hanging around. No problem there. Send for Captain Carrot. That's my advice." Another evening folded into the city in layers of fog. When Carrot arrived back at the watch house, Corporal Littlebottom made a face at him and indicated with a flicker of her eyes. The three people standing grimly on the bench against one wall. "They want to see an officer," she hissed. "But Sergeant Colin isn't back yet, and I knocked on Mr. Vimes' door, and I don't think he's in." Carrot composed his features into a welcoming smile. "Mrs. Palm," he said, "and Mr. Boggess, and Dr. Downey. I am so sorry, we're rather stretched at present. What with the poisoning and this business with the golems." The head of the Assassin's Guild smiled, but only with his mouth. "It's about the poisoning we wish to speak," he said. "Is there somewhere a little less public?" "Well, there's the canteen," said Carrot. It'll be empty at this time of night, if you just step this way. You do well for yourselves here, I must say, said Mrs. Palm. A canteen. She stopped as she stepped through the door. People eat in here? Well, grumble about the coffee, mostly Carrot, said Carrot. And write their reports. Commander Vimes is keen on reports. Captain Carrot, said Dr. Downey firmly, we have to talk to you on a grave matter concerning what have I sat on. Carrot brushed a chair hurriedly. Sorry, sir, we don't seem to have much time to clean up. Leave it for now. Leave it for now. The head of the Assassin's Guild leaned forward with his hands pressed together. Captain Carrot, we are here to discuss this terrible matter of the poisoning of Lord Veterinary. You really ought to talk to Commander Vimes. I believe that on a number of occasions, Commander Vimes has made derogatory comments to you about Lord Veterinary, said Dr. Downey. You mean like he ought to be hung except they can't find a twisty enough rope? Said Carrot. Oh, yes, but everyone does that, do you? Well, no, Carrot admitted. And I believe he personally took over the investigation of the poisoning. Well, yes, but didn't you think that was odd? No, sir, not when I thought about it. I think he's got a sort of soft spot for the patrician, and his way. He once said if anyone was going to kill Veterinary, he'd like it to be him. Indeed. But he was smiling when he said it, sort of smiling anyway. He visits his lordship most days, I believe. Yes, sir. And I understand that his efforts to discover the poisoner have not reached any conclusions? Not as such, sir, said Carrot. We found a lot of ways he's not being poisoned. Downey nodded at the others. We would like to inspect the commander's office, he said. I don't know if that's, Carrot began. Please think very carefully, said Dr. Downey. We three represent most of the guilds in this city. We feel we have a good reason for inspecting the commander's office. You will, of course, accompany us to see that we do nothing illegal. Carrot looked awkward. I suppose if I am with you, he said. That's right, said Downey. That makes it official. Carrot led the way. I don't know how. I don't even know if he's back, he said, opening the door. As I said, we've been... Oh. Downey peered around him and at the figure slumped over the desk. It would appear that Sir Samuel is in, he said, but quite out of it. I can smell the drink from here, said Mrs. Palm. It's terrible what drink will do to a man. A whole bottle of Bear Hugger's finest, said Mr. Voggs. All right for some, eh? But he hasn't touched a drop all year, said Carrot, giving the recumbent Vimes a shake. He goes to meetings about it and everything. Now let us see, said Downey. He pulled open one of the desk drawers and held it open. Captain Carrot, he said, can you witness that there appears to be a bag of grayish powder in here? I will now... Vimes's hand shot out and slammed the drawer on the man's fingers. His elbow rammed back into the assassin's stomach, and as Downey's chin jerked down, Vimes's arm swung upward and caught him full on the nose. Then Vimes opened his eyes. What's that? What's that? He said, raising his head. Dr. Downey? Mr. Bogus? Carrot? What? What? Screamed Downey. You... Fuck me. Oh, I'm so sorry, said Vimes, concern radiating from every feature as he pushed the chair back into Downey's groin and stood up. I'm afraid it must have dropped off, and, of course, when I woke up and found someone stealing from... You're raving drunk, man, said Mr. Bogus. Vimes's features froze. Indeed. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, he snarled, prodding the man in the chest. A peck of bloody pickled peppers Peter Piper damn well picked. Do you want me to continue? He said, poking the man until his back was in swell. It doesn't get much better. What about the packet? Shouted Downey, clutching his streaming nose with one hand and waving at the desk with the other. Vimes still wore a wild-eyed, mirthless grin. Ah, well, yes, he said. You've got me there. A highly dangerous substance. Ah, you admit it. Yes, indeed. I suppose I have no alternative.
but to dispose of the evidence. Vimes grabbed the packet, ripped it open, and tipped most of the contents into his mouth. Mmm, he said, powder spraying everywhere as he masticated. Feel that tingle on the tongue. But that's arsenic, said Bogus. Good gods, is it? Said Vimes, swallowing. Amazing. I've got this dwarf downstairs, you know, clever little bugger. Spends all his time with pipes and chemicals and things to find out what is arsenic and what isn't. And all the time, here's you, able to spot it just by looking. I've got to hand it to you. He dropped the torn packet into Bogus's hand. But the thief jerked back, and the packet tumbled to the floor, spraying its contents. Excuse me, said Carrot. He knelt down and peered at the powder. It is traditionally the belief of policemen that they can tell what a substance is by sniffing it and then gingerly tasting it. But this practice has ceased in the watch ever since Constable Flint had dipped his finger into a black market consignment of ammonium chloride cut with radium and said, yes, this is definitely slab, and had to spend 3 days tied to his bed until the spiders went away. Nevertheless, Carrot said, I'm sure this isn't poisonous. Licked his finger and tried a bit. It's sugar, he said. Downey, his composure severely compromised, waved a finger at Vimes. You admitted it was dangerous, he screamed. Right, take too much of it and see what it does to your teeth, bellowed Vimes. What did you think it was? We had information, Bogus began. Oh, you had information, did you? Said Vimes. You hear that, Captain? They had information. So that's all right. We acted in good faith, said Bogus. Let me see, said Vimes. Your information was something on the lines of, Vimes is dead drunk in the watch house, and he's got a bag of arsenic in his desk. And I'll just bet you wanted to act in good faith, eh? Mrs. Palm cleared her throat. This has gone far enough. You are correct, Sir Samuel, she said. We were all sent a note. She handed a slip of paper to Vimes. It had been written in capitals. And I can see we have been misinformed, she added, glaring at Bogus and Downey. Do allow me to apologize. Come, gentlemen. She swept out the door. Bogus followed her quickly. Downey dabbed at his nose. What's the guild price on your head, Sir Samuel? He said. $20,000, really. I think we shall definitely have to upgrade you. Delighted. I shall have to buy a new bear trap. I'll show you out, said Carrot. When he hurried back, he found Vimes leaning out of the window and feeling the wall below it. Not a brick dislodged, Vimes muttered. Not a tile loose. And the front office has been manned all day. Odd that. He shrugged and walked back to his desk, where he picked up the note. And I shouldn't think we'll be able to find any clues on this, he said. There's too many greasy finger marks all over it. He put down the paper and glared at Carrot. When we find the man responsible, he said, somewhere on the top of the charge, she is going to be forcing Commander Vimes to tip a whole bottle of single malt onto the carpet. That's a hanging offense, he shuddered. There were some things a man should not have to do. It's disgusting, said Carrot. Fancy them even thinking that you'd poison the patrician. I'm offended that they think I'd be daft enough to keep the poison in my desk drawer, said Vimes, lighting a cigar. Right, said Carrot. Did they think you were some kind of fool who'd keep evidence like that where anyone could find it? Exactly, said Vimes, leaning back. That's why I've got it in my pocket. He put his feet on the desk and blew out a cloud of smoke. He'd have to get rid of the carpet. He wasn't going to spend the rest of his life working in a room haunted by the smell of departed spirits. Carrot's mouth was still open. Oh, good grief, said Vimes. Look, it's quite simple, man. I was expected to go, at last, alcohol, and chug-a-lug the whole lot without thinking. Then some respectable pillars of the community. He removed his cigar from his mouth and spat. We're going to find me. In your presence, too. Which was a nice touch, with the evidence of my crime neatly hidden. but not so well hidden that they couldn't find it. He shook his head sadly. The trouble is, you know, that once the taste has got you, it never lets go. But you've been very good, sir, said Carrot. I've not seen you touch a drop for... Oh, that, said Vimes. I was talking about policing, not alcohol. There's lots of people will help you with the alcohol business. But there's no one out there arranging little meetings where you can stand up and say, my name is Sam, and I'm a really suspicious bastard. He pulled a paper bag out of his pocket. We'll get Little Bottom to have a look at this, he said. I damn sure wasn't going to try tasting it. So I nipped down to the canteen and filled the bag with sugar out of the bowl. It was but the work of a moment to fish Nobby's butts out of it, I might add. He opened the door, poked his head out into the corridor, and yelled, Little Bottom, to Carrot, he added. You know, I feel quite perked up. The old brain has begun to work at last. You know the golem that did the killing? Yes, sir. Ah, but do you know what was special about it? Can't think, sir, said Carrot, except that it was a new one. The golems made it themselves, I think. But of course they needed a priest for the words, and they had to borrow Mr. Hopkinson's sub. I expect the old men thought it would be interesting. They were historians, after all. It was Vimes' turn to stand there with his mouth open. Finally, he got control of himself. Yes, yes. Of course, he said, his voice barely shaking. Yes, I mean, that's obvious. Plain as the nose on your face. But, have you worked out what else is so special about it? He added, trying to keep any traces of hope out of his voice. You mean the fact it's gone mad, sir? Well, I didn't think it was the winner of the Ankh-Morpork Mr. Sanity Award, said Vimes. I mean, they drove it mad, sir. The other golems, they didn't mean to, but it was built in, sir. They wanted to do so many things. It was like their child, I think. All their hopes and dreams. And when they found out it had been killing people, well, that's terrible to a golem. They mustn't kill, and it was their own clay doing it. It was a great idea for people. It's not a great idea for people either. But they'd put all their future in it. You wanted me, Commander, said Cherry. Oh, yes, is this arsenic? Said Vimes, handing her the packet. Cherry sniffed at it. Could be arsenic acid, sir. I'll have to test it, of course. I thought acid sloshed around about in jars, said Vimes. What's that on your hands? Nail varnish, sir. Nail varnish? Yes, sir. Fine. Funny, I thought it would be green. Wouldn't look good on the fingers, sir. I meant the arsenic, Little Bottom. Oh, you can get all sorts of colors of arsenic, sir. The sulfides, that's the ores, sir. Can be red or brown or yellow or gray, sir. And then you cook them up with nitre, and you get arsenic acid, sir. And a load of nasty smoke. Really bad. Dangerous stuff, said Vimes. Not good at all, sir. But useful, sir, said Cherry. Tanners, dyers, painters. It's not just prisoners that have got a use for arsenic. I'm surprised people aren't dropping dead of it all the time. Oh, most of them use golems, sir. The word stayed in the air about air even after Cherry stopped speaking. Vimes caught Carrot's eye and started to whistle hoarsely under his breath. This is it, he thought. This is where we've filled ourselves up with so many questions that they're starting to overflow and become answers. He felt more alive than he had for days. The recent excitement still tingled in his veins, kicking his brains into life. It was the sparkle you got with exhaustion. He knew. You were so bone weary that a shot of adrenaline hit you like a falling troll. They must have it all now. All the bits, the edges, the counter corners, the whole piece, all there, just waiting to be pieced together. These golems, said Carrot, they'd be covered in arsenic, would they? Could be, sir. I saw one at the Alchemist's Guild building an aquarium, and ha, it even got arsenic plated on its hands, sir, on account of stirring crucibles with its fingers. They don't feel heat, said Vimes, or pain, said Carrot. That's right, said Cherry. She looked uncertainly from one to the other. You can't poison them, said Vimes. And they'll obey orders, said Carrot, without speaking. Golems do all the really mucky jobs, said Vimes. You could have mentioned this before, Cherry, said Carrot. Well, you know, sir, golems are just there, sir. No one notices golems. Grease under his finger, said Vimes, to the room in general. The old man scratched at his murderer. Grease under his fingernails, with arsenic in it. He looked down at the notebook, still on his desk. It's there, he thought, something we haven't seen. But we've looked everywhere. So we've seen the answer, and haven't seen that it is the answer. And if we don't see it now, at this moment, we'll never see it at all. No offense, sir, but that's probably not a help, said Cherry's voice, somewhere in the distance. So many of the trades that use arsenic involve some kind of grease. Something we don't see, though, thought Vimes. Something invisible. No, it wouldn't have to be invisible. Something we don't see because it's always there. Something that strikes in the night. And there it was. He blinked. The glittering stars of exhaustion were causing his mind to think oddly. Well, thinking rationally hadn't worked. No one move, he said. He held up a hand for silence. There it is, he said softly. There, on my desk. You see it? What, sir? You mean you haven't worked it out? Said Vimes. What, sir? The thing that's poisoning his lordship. There it is, on the desk. See? Your notebook. No, he drinks Bearhugger's whiskey, said Cherry. I doubt it, said Vimes. The blotter? Said Carrot. Poison pins? A packet of pantweeds? What are they? Said Vimes, patting his pockets. Just sticking out from under the letters in the entracer. Where are they? Entracer, said Carrot. He added reproachfully. You know, sir. The ones you don't answer. Vimes picked up the packet and extracted another cigar. Thanks, he said. Ha, I didn't ask Mildred Easy what else she took. But of course there are servants' little bonus, too. And old Mrs. Easy was a seamstress. A proper seamstress. And this is autumn, killed by the knights drawing in. See? Carrot crouched down and looked at the surface of the desk. Can't see it myself, sir. He said, of course you can't, said Vimes, because there's nothing to see. You can't see it. That's how you can't tell it's there. If it wasn't there, you'd soon see it. He gave a huge manic grin. Only you wouldn't. See? You all right, sir? Said Carrot. I know you've been overdoing it a bit these last few days. I've been underdoing it, said Vimes. I've been running around looking for damn clues instead of just thinking for 5 minutes. What is it I'm always telling you? Never trust anybody, sir? No, not that. Everyone's guilty of something, sir? Not that either. Just because someone's a member of an ethnic minority doesn't mean they're not a nasty, small-minded little jerk, sir. No, when did I say that? Last week, sir. Even after we'd had the visit from the Campaign for Equal Heights, sir. Well, not that. I mean, I'm pretty sure I'm always saying something about something else that's very relevant here. Something pithy about police work. Can't remember anything right now, sir. Well, I'll damn well make up something and start saying it a lot from now on. Jolly good, sir. Carrot beamed. It's good to see your old self again, sir. Looking forward to prodding puddocks, sir. What have we found, sir? You'll see. We're going to the palace. Fetch Angua. We might need her. And bring the search warrant. You mean the sledgehammer, sir? Yes, said Kiss. Yes, and Sergeant Colin, too. He hasn't signed in again yet, sir, said Cherry. He should have gone off duty an hour ago. Probably hanging around somewhere, staying out of trouble, said Vimes.
We Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the wall. Somewhere below Colin, two red eyes stared up at him. Heavy, is it? Sss. Kick it with your other foot. There was a sucking sound. Colin winced. There was a plop, a moment of silence, and a loud crash of pottery down in the street. The boot it was holding came off, moaned Colin. How did that happen? It got lubricated. Wee Mad Arthur tugged out a finger. Up yous come, then. Can't. Why not? It ain't holding on to yous no more. Arm's tired. Another 10 seconds and I'm going to be a chalk outline. Nah, no one's got that much shock. Wee Mad Arthur knelt down on so that his head was level with Colin's eyes. If you gonna die, do you mind signing a chitty to say you has promised me a dollar? Down below, there was a chink of pottery shards. What was that? Said Colin. I thought the damn thing smashed up. Wee Mad Arthur looked down. Do you believe in that reincarnation stuff, Mr. Colin? He said.
You wouldn't get me tossing, retouching that forest,
Buck, said Colin. Well, it's putting itself together, like one of them jigsaw puzzles. Well done, Wee Mad Arthur, said Colin. But I know you're just saying that so as I'll make the effort to haul myself up, right? Statues don't go putting themselves back together when they're smashed up. Please yourself, it's done nearly a whole leg already. Colin managed to peer down through the small and smelly space between the wall and his armpit. All he could see were shreds of fog and a faint glow. You sure? He said. Yes, run around rat holes. He's learned to see good in the dark, said Wee Mad Arthur. Otherwise, he's dead. Something hissed somewhere below Colin's feet. With his one booted foot and his toes, he scrabbled at the brickwork. It's having a wee bit of trouble, said Wee Mad Arthur, conversationally. Looks like it's put its knees on wrong way round. Dorfel sat hunched in the abandoned cellar where the golems had met. Occasionally, the golem raised its head and hissed. Red light spilled from its eyes. If something had streamed back down through the glow. Soared through the eye sockets into the red sky beyond. There would be Dorfel huddled under the glow of the universe. Its murmur was a long way off. Muted. Nothing to do with Dorfel. The words stood around the horizon, reaching all the way to the sky. And a voice said quietly, "Yo and yourself." Dorfel saw the scene again and again, saw the concerned face, hand reaching up, filling its vision, felt the sudden icy knowledge, own yourself. It echoed off the words, and then rebounded, and then rolled back and forth, increasing in volume until the little world became the words, between the words, was gripped in the sound. Gollum must have a master. The letters towered against the world, but the echoes poured around them, blasting like a sandstorm. Cracks started and then ran, zigzagging across the stone, and then the words exploded. Great slabs of them, mountain-sized, crashed in showers of red sand. The universe poured in. Dorfel felt the universe pick it up and bowl it over, and then lift it off its feet and sat. And up, and now the golem was among the universe. It could feel it all around, the purr of it, the busyness, the spinning complexity of it, the roar. And there were no words between you and it. You belonged to it. It belonged to you. You couldn't turn your back on it because there it was in front of you. Dorfel was responsible for every tick and swerve of it. You couldn't say, I had orders. You couldn't say, it's not fair. No one was listening. There were no words.
You owned yourself. Dwarfel orbited a pair of glowing suns and hurtled off again. Not thou shalt not say, I will not. Dwarfel tumbled through the red sky, then saw a dark hole ahead. The golem felt it dragging at him and streamed down through the glow, and the hole grew larger and sped across the edges of Dorfel's vision. The golem opened his eyes. No master! Dwarfel unfolded in one movement and stood upright. He reached out one arm and extended a finger. The golem pushed the finger easily into the wall where the argument had taken place, and then dragged it carefully through the splintering brickwork. It took him a couple of minutes, but it was something Dwarfel felt needed to be said. Dwarfel completed the last letter and poked a row of three dots after it. Then the golem walked away, leaving behind no master. A blue overcast from the cigars hid the ceiling of the smoking room. Ah, yes, Captain Carrot, said a chair. Yes, indeed, but is he the right man? He's got a birthmark shaped like a crown. I've seen it, said Nobby helpfully, but his background. He was raised by dwarfs, said Nobby. He waved his brandy glass at a waiter. Same again, mister. I shouldn't think dwarfs could raise anyone very high, said another chair. There was a hint of laughter. Rumors and folklore, someone murmured. This is a large and busy and above all complex city. I'm afraid that having a sword and a birthmark are not much in the way of qualifications. We would need a king from a lineage that is used to command, like yours, my lord. There was a sucking, draining noise as Nobby attacked the fresh glass of brandy. Oh, I'm used to command, all right, he said, lowering the glass. People are always ordering me around. We would need a king who had the support of the great families and major guilds of the city. People like Carrot, said Nobby. Oh, the people. Anyway, whoever got the job had half his work cut out, said Nobby. Old veterinary is always pushing paper. What kind of fun is that? It's no life sitting up all hours, worrying never a moment to yourself. He held out the empty glass. Same again, my old mate. Fill it right up this time, eh? No sense in having a great big glass and only sloshing a bit in the bottom, is there? Many people prefer to savor the bouquet, said a quietly horrified chair. They enjoy sniffing it. Nobby looked at his glass with the red-veined eyes of one who'd heard rumors about what the upper crust got up to. Nah, he said. I'll go on sticking it in my mouth, if it's all the same to you. If we may get to the point, said another chair, a king would not have to spend every moment running the city. He would, of course, have people to do that. Advisors, counselors, people of experience. So what did he have to do? Said Nobby. He'd have to reign, said a chair. Wave. Preside at banquets. Sign things. Guzzle good brandy disgustingly. Reign. Sounds like a good job to me, said Nobby. All right for some, eh? Of course, a king would have to be someone who could recognize a hint if it was dropped on his head from a great height, said a speaker sharply. But the other chair shushed him into silence. Nobby managed to find his mouth after several goes and took another long pull at his cigar. Seems to me, he said, seems to me what you want to do is find some knob with time on his hands and say, yo, it's your lucky day. Let's see you wave that hand. Ah, that's a good idea. Does any name cross your mind, my lord? Have a drop more brandy. Why, thanks, you're tough. Of course, so am I, eh? That's right, flunky. All the way to the top. No, can't think of anyone that fits the bill. In fact, my lord, we were indeed thinking of offering the crown to you. Nobby's eyes bulged, and then his cheek bulged. It is not a good idea to spray finest brandy across the room, especially when your lighted cigar is in the way. The flame hit the far wall,
where it left a perfect chrysanthemum of scorched woodwork. While, in accordance with a fundamental rule of physics, Nobby's chair screamed back on its casters and thudded into the door. "King?" Nobby coughed. And then they had to slap him on the back until he got his breath again. "King," he wheezed. "And have Mr. Vimes cut me head off?" "All the brandy you can drink, my lord," said a wheedling voice. "It's no good if you ain't got a throat for it to go down." "What are you talking about? Mr. Vimes would go spare. He'd go spare." "Good heavens, man. My lord, someone corrected. "My lord, I mean. When you're king, you can tell that wretched Sir Samuel what to do. You'll be, as you would call it, the boss. You could tell old Stoneface what to do," said Nobby. "That's right. I'd be a king and tell old Stoneface what to do," said Nobby. "Yes." Nobby stared into the smoky gloom. "He'd go spare. Listen, you silly little man, my lord. You silly little lord. You'd be able to have him executed if you wished. I couldn't do that. Why not? He goes spare. The man calls himself an officer of the law. And whose law does he listen to, eh? Where does his law come from? I don't know," groaned Nobby. "He says it comes up through his boots." He looked around. The shadows and the smoke seemed to be closing in. "I can't be king. Old Vimes would go spare." "Will you stop saying that?" Nobby pulled at his collar. "It's a bit hot and smoky in here," he mumbled. "Which way's the window?"
"Over there." The chair rocked. Nobby hit the glass helmet at first, landed on top of a waiting carriage, bounced off, and ran into the night, trying to escape destiny in general, and axes in particular. Sherry Littlebottom strode into the palace kitchens and fired her crossbow into the ceiling. "Don't nobody move," she yelled. The patrician's domestic staff looked up from their dinner. "When you say don't nobody move," said Drumknot carefully, fastidiously taking a piece of plaster off his plate, "do you in fact mean, all right, Corporal, I'll take over now," said Vimes, patting Sherry on the shoulder. "Is Mildred Easy here?" All heads turned. Mildred's spoon dropped into her soup. "It's all right," said Vimes. "I just need to ask a few more questions." "I'm sorry, sir." "You haven't done anything wrong," said Vimes, walking around the table. "But you didn't just take food home for your family, did you?" Sir? "What else did you take?" Mildred looked at the suddenly blank expressions on the faces of the other servants. There was the old sheets, but Mrs. Diplock did say I could have. "No, not that," said Vimes. Mildred licked her dry lips. There was some boot polish. "Look," said Vimes, as kindly as possible. "Everyone takes small things from the place where they work. Small stuff that no one notices. No one thinks of it as stealing. It's like rights, odds and ends. Ends, Miss Easy. I'm thinking about the word ends. Or you mean the candle ends, sir?" Vimes took a deep breath. It was such a relief to be right, even though you knew you'd only got there by trying every possible way to be wrong. "Ah," he said. But that's not stealing, sir. I've never stolen nothing, sir. But you take home the candle stubs. Still half an hour of light in them, I expect, if you burn them in a saucer," said Vimes gently. "But that's not stealing, sir. That's perks, sir." Vimes smacked his forehead. "Perks, of course. That's the word I was looking for. Perks. Everyone gets to have perks, aren't I right?" "Well, that's fine, then," he said. "I expect you get the ones from the bedrooms, yes?" Even through her nervousness, Mildred Easy was able to grin the grin of someone with an entitlement the lesser things hadn't got. "Yes, sir. I'm allowed, sir. They're much better than the old coarse ones we use in the main halls, sir. And you put in fresh candles when necessary, do you?" "Yes, sir." "Probably slightly more often than necessary," Vimes thought. "No point in letting them burn down too much. Perhaps you can show me where they're kept, miss."
The maid looked along the table to the housekeeper, who glanced at Commander Vimes and then nodded. She was bright enough to know when something that sounded like a question really wasn't one. "We keep them in the candle pantry next door, sir," said Mildred. "Lead the way," said Please. It wasn't a big room, but its shelves were stacked floor to ceiling with candles. There were the yard high ones used in the public halls, and the small everyday ones used everywhere else, sorted according to quality. "These are what we use in his lordship's rooms, sir." She handed him 12 inches of white candle. "Oh yes, very good quality. Number fives. Nice white tallow," said Vimes, tossing it up and down. "We burn these at home. The stuff we use at the yard is damn near pork dripping. We get ours from Carrie's in the shambles now. Very reasonable prices. We used to deal with Spadger and Williams, but Mr. Carrie's really cornered the market these days, hasn't he?"
"Yes, sir. And he delivers them special, sir." "And you put these candles in your lordship's his lordship's room every day?" "Yes, sir. Anywhere else?" "Oh, no, sir. His lordship's particular about that. We just use number threes."
"And you take your perks home?"
"Yes, sir," Cran said. "They gave a lovely light, sir. I expect she sat up with your little brother, did she? Because I expect he got took sick first, so she sat up with him all night long, night after night, and, ha, if I know old Mrs. Easy, she did her sewing." "Yes, sir." There was a pause. "Use my handkerchief," said Vimes, after a while. "Am I going to lose my position, sir?" "No, that's definite. No one involved deserves to lose their job," said Vimes. He looked at the candle. "Except possibly me," he added. He stopped at the doorway and turned. "And if you ever want candle ends, we've always got lots at the watch house. Nobby will have to start buying cooking fat like everyone else." "What's it doing now?" said Sergeant Cullen. Wee Mad Arthur peered over the edge of the roof again. "It's having problems with its elbows," he said conversationally. "It keeps looking at one of them and trying its way it always up, and it's not working. I had that trouble when I put up them kitchen units for Mrs. Cullen," said the sergeant. "The instructions on how to open the box were inside the box." Oh, it's worked it out," said the rat catcher. "Looks like it had it mixed up with its knees after all." Cullen heard a clank below him. "And now it's gone around the corner. There was a crash of splintering wood. Now it's got into the building. I expect it'll come up the stairs, but it looks like you'll be okay." "Why?" "'Cause all you gotta do is let go of the roof, see? I'll drop to my death." "Right. Nice clean way to go. None of the arms and legs being ripped off stuff first." I wanted to buy a farm," moaned Cullen. "Could be," said Arthur. He looked over the roof again. "Or," he said, as if this were hardly a better option, "you just could try to grab the drain pipe." Cullen looked sideways. There was a pipe a few feet away. If he swung his body and really made an effort, he might just miss it by inches and plunge to his death. "Does it look safe?" he said. "Compared with what, mister?" Cullen tried to swing his legs like a pendulum. Every muscle in his arm screamed at him. He knew he was overweight. He'd always meant to take exercise one day. He just hadn't been aware that it was going to be today. "I reckon I can hear it walking up the stairs," said Wee Mad Arthur. Cullen tried to swing faster. "What are you going to do?" he said. "Oh, don't you worry about me," said Wee Mad Arthur. I'll be fine. I'll jump." "Jump?" "Sure. I'll be safe because of being normal sized, see?" "You think you're normal sized?" Wee Mad Arthur looked at Colin's hands. "Are these your fingers right here by my boots?" he said. Right. You're normal sized. It's not your fault you've moved into a city full of giants," said Cullen. "Right. The smaller you are, the lighter you fall. Well, no, in fact, a spider will not even notice a drop like this. A mouse would walk away. A horse would break every bone in its body, and an elephant would splat. Oh, gods, muttered Colin. He could feel the drain pipe with his boot now. But getting a grip would mean there would have to be one long, bottomless moment when he was not exactly holding on to the roof and not exactly holding on to the drain pipe, and in very serious peril of holding on to the ground. There was another crash from somewhere on the roof. Right, said Wee Mad Arthur. See you at the bottom. Oh, gods. The gnome stepped off the roof. All okay so far, he shouted as he went past Colin. Oh, gods. Sergeant Colin looked up into two red glows. Doing fine up to now, said a dopplering voice from below. Oh, gods. Colin heaved his legs around and stood on fresh air for a moment, grabbed the top of the pipe, ducked his head as a pottery fist swung at him, heard the nasty little noise as the pipe's rusty bolt said goodbye to the wall, and still clinging to a tilting length of cast iron pipe as if it were going to help, disappear backward into the fog. Mr. Sock looked up at the sound of the door opening and then cowered back against the sausage machine. You, he whispered. Here, you can't come back. I sold you. Drolfo regarded him steadily for a few seconds and then walked past him and took the largest cleaver from the blood-stained rack on the wall. Sock began to shake. I was always good to you, he said. Always let you have your holy days off. Dorful stared at him again. It's only red light, Sock gibbered to himself. But it seemed more focused. He felt it entering his head through his own eyes and examining his soul. The golem pushed him aside and stepped out of the slaughterhouse and towards the cattle pens. Sock unfroze. They never fought back, did they? They couldn't. It was how the damn things were made. He stared around at the other workers, humans and trolls alike. Don't just stand there. Get it. One or two hesitated. It was a big cleaver in the golem's hand. And when Dorfel stopped to look around at them, there was something different about the golem's stance, too. Didn't look like something that wouldn't fight back. But Sock didn't employ people for the muscles in their heads. Besides, no one had really liked a golem around the place. A troll aimed a poleaxe at him. Dorfel caught it one-handed and without turning his head and snapped the hickory handle with his fingers. A man with a hammer had it plucked from his hand and thrown so hard at the wall that it left a hole. After that, they followed at a cautious distance. Dorfel took no notice of them. The steam over the cattle pens mingled further with the fog. Hundreds of dark eyes watched Dorfel curiously as it walked between the fences. They were always quiet when the golem was around. He stopped by one of the largest pens. There are voices from behind. Don't tell me it's going to slaughter the lot of them. We'll never get that lot jointed this shift. I heard where there was one at a carpenter's that went odd and made 5,000 tables in one night. Lost count or something. It's just staring at them. I mean, 5,000 tables. One of them had 27 legs. It got stuck on legs. Dorfel brought the cleaver down hard and sliced the lock off the gate. The cattle watched the golem with the guarded expression, which cattle have the means they're waiting for the next thought to turn up. He walked on to the sheep pens and opened them too. The pigs were next, and then the poultry. All of them? Said Mr. Sock. The golem walked calmly back down the line of pens, ignoring the watchers, and re-entered the slaughterhouse. He came out very shortly afterwards, leading the ancient and hairy billy goat on a piece of string. He went past the waiting animals until he until he reached the wide gates that opened into the main road, which had opened. And then he let the goat loose. The animal sniffed the air and rolled its slotted eyes. Then, apparently deciding that the distant odor of the cabbage fields beyond the city wall was much preferable to the smells immediately around it, it trotted away up the road. The animals followed it in a rush, but with hardly any other noise than the rustle of movement and the sounds of their hooves. They streamed down the stationary figure of around the stationary figure of Dorful, who stood and watched them go. A chicken, bewildered by the stampede, landed on the golem's head and started to cluck. Anger finally overcame Sock's terror. "What the hell are you doing?" he shouted, trying to find a few stray sheep as they bolted out of the pens. "That's money walking out of the gate, you." Dorful's hand was suddenly around his throat. The golem picked him up and held the struggling man at arm's length, tuning its head this way and that, as if it considering its next course of action. Finally, he tossed away the cleaver, reached up under the chicken that had taken up residence, and produced a small brown egg. With apparent ceremony, the golem smashed it carefully on Sock's scalp and dropped him. The golem's former co-workers jumped back out of the way as Dorful walked back through the slaughterhouse. There was a tally board at the by the entrance. Dorful looked at it for a while, then picked up the chalk and wrote, "No master." The chalk crumpled in its fingers. Dorful walked out into the fog.